I thought I was running late.
Wrong!
Yeah, of all the dramatic things I've ever seen!
It takes a lot to make a stew.
A pinch of salt and laughter too.
A scoop of kids to add the spice.
A dash of love to make it nice. And you got,
and you got
too many cooks,
too many cooks.
Too many cooks.
All right, that's enough playing around. I thought I was late, but in fact I was not. The computer was moving faster than ever before. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Careless Whispers. Happy Thanksgiving a few days ago. Calvin, hello, sir.
Hello, yep. In fact, I was late because I forgot the telephone number and I had to go look it up. But here I am.
Uh-huh. Oh,
I'm back.
You're here. Anyway, how was your holiday, sir?
My holiday was terrible because I had some sort of stomach virus and did not enjoy my Thanksgiving dinner at all. How was yours?
Mine was very good. Mine was pretty standard. Went over to my parents' house, took a day trip to Vermont the next day, had a nice weekend otherwise. Had our annual scorpion bowls at a Chinese restaurant on Thanksgiving night, so that was wonderful.
What does one do in Vermont? What's the thing to do when you arrive in the state of Vermont?
My girlfriend has family in Vermont, so we sat in her grandmother's house and just talked to them and had some pizza. And we had some chocolate cream pie. And then we played Catchphrase.
Oh, I like Catchphrase.
It's a good one. But the thing about playing Catchphrase, they've got two different catchphrases. And one of them is the old version of Catchphrase. And the new version, we never play. They don't want to play the new version. They want to stick to the one, which is perfectly fine because I'm actually pretty good at it, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, you're probably not as good as me, though. I'm just going to throw that out there. Wait, before we move on, yams or stuffing? You got to pick one.
Stuffing. I don't know if I've ever had yams in my life, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't like yams at all, so it was a trick question. The correct answer is indeed stuffing.
All right, we're going to have to play Catchphrase on this show at one point, I think.
Do you have a catchphrase? Can we do this over the air? Is that doable? I don't know.
Well, I mean, we would have to come up with our own list of things, I suppose, and I don't know how that would work. I would love to be able to figure it out, though.
Yeah, maybe we can add a new look. I like games, so if we want to add a new game to the show, we can figure that out down the road. In the meantime, right, we have some sports things to discuss, as we do sometimes. Yeah, so, I don't know if you want to start off with how you feeling right now? How you feeling about sports right now?
I feel pretty good. I've been kind of tuned out of the NFL this entire weekend, to be honest with you. I barely saw any of the Patriots game. I haven't really been paying much attention this weekend for whatever reason. Even though there are three games in prime time on Thanksgiving, I didn't really watch any of them either. But I do know that we don't start with the NFL around here very often, so we're not going to do that tonight either. We start with the Boston Celtics, of course. Last night's game, Calvin, against the Detroit Pistons, not a good showing for the Celtics. And I think if anybody listened to the post-game show last night, which started late, myself and Sam Sheehan, we're on the air and basically for the whole show said that we're glad that, or we're hoping that this splashes a little bit of cold water on the hype train that was starting to follow the Boston Celtics, because they have flaws, They're still not a championship level team in my mind, but the streak was a lot of fun, and I hope people sort of come back down to earth on what on how much they were building up the Celtics over the past few weeks, because it was getting to a point where you kind of had to just start rolling your eyes at some of the people that were coming out of the woodwork saying they're going to win the championship, blah, blah, blah. But I guess we start there. I don't know if you saw any of that game last night, but Detroit was – they came to play. They came to prove themselves, and the Celtics didn't really punch back.
So it's funny because we didn't – unfortunately did not do a show last week because I was I wanted to talk about the Celtics sort of in the height of this Celtics mania and sort of where you thought about them. And now we're – now the conversation is like – coming in off a loss against Detroit. And granted, they just lost not the game before, but the game before that, right? They lost 2-3. That's correct, right? To the Miami. Am I right?
That's correct.
So do you feel like this team, not that it's in trouble, but do you feel like they're slacking off a little bit? Or do you feel like Do you feel like this Celtics team, like, could actually be the best team in the NBA, or like
no.
right there? So I thought
even after beating Golden State and being in the building for it and seeing them on this incredible run, I didn't think that they were going to be the best team in the NBA when it was all said and done. No, I think that they're too raw, they're too young, and that they're the two young guys, Tatum and Brown, are too inconsistent, and they need to build that consistency. And I think that what you saw against Detroit really exploited them on against when they're playing against players who can really run that pick and roll well and dominate at the rim. And even though I'm going to go look up Hassan Whiteside's numbers in that game against the Celtics. I don't think they were as gaudy as Drummond's last night. I think that's part of the reason the Heat won that game as well, because the Celtics don't really have a counter for a large athletic center that can dominate on both ends of the court. And Drummond he showed up. He came to play in that game. And in my mind, he was the reason that the Celtics lost. Why don't they show box scores on this? I gotta go to their website. I think the Celtics have shown that they have a weakness there, defending a big athletic center. And if they were to meet Detroit in a playoff series, I think that thing goes 7 games, and I would be nervous if the Celtics lose that game 7.
Hassan Whiteside, 8 points, 10 rebounds, 2 blocks.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Not like Drummond, but still significant, I would say. He definitely contributed in that win.
Oh, yeah. No, contributed, yeah. But it wasn't like, it wasn't like we lost because we couldn't stop this dominant center. That game was Deion Waiters going off in the fourth quarter, if I remember.
Right. Well, either way, I think that's the big comparison between the two teams, even though Whiteside didn't have that great of a game. And that's not the big takeaway for me from last night. I fear players like that, but the bottom line is there aren't that many players that they would have to go up against like that to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. Drummond might be one of the only ones that actually makes their way into a playoff series with the Celtics this year. Who knows? We'll see how it all shakes out. But the more pressing issue to me, Calvin, is that they don't have a consistent number two scorer. And if Kyrie Irving is not having a Kyrie Irving all-world type of night, just in a similar fashion to Isaiah Thomas last year, they struggle to put points on the board, and they often get lost on offense. And that is the thing that scares me more than not being able to match up against a guy like Drummond.
It is interesting how far ahead they are defensively than offensively right now.
Miles ahead.
Yeah, especially because we did. When you think back to last year, they were a good offensive team that had like a couple of defensive issues, especially early on. This time, at that point last year, and they sort of got their act together to some degree defensively, but they were not a great defensive team last year. And this year, they feel like a great defensive team, but not a great offensive team. So, who is your number two option? It is interesting, and I guess at some point I want to get back into this debate that we didn't have on this show, but we had on a post-game show. By the way, I think I need to get in touch with Bobby Manning because maybe he just doesn't like me, but yeah, I've not been on a post-game show in like a month, so I haven't even had the chance to
Did you tell him when you were available in November?
I did. I told him I was pretty much good, even though that's changed somewhat because I've got a new job, but yeah, he hasn't scheduled me at all. Anyway, it's like last season, I feel like I was doing all kinds of games, but he wasn't doing it until like the finals. And now that he's doing it, I don't know. He seems to have erased me from the schedule. In any case, So we had that debate about Jaylen Brown versus Jason Tatum, and I was like on Team Brown, and you and Jelsa, who was also on with it, were so adamant about Tatum.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to me now for you to like feel like there's no second scorer, because in my mind, if there's one thing that Tatum like is best at is when you need that shot, you can just hand him the ball.
I mean, if you're going to talk about going forward over the course of a career, which is what that conversation basically was, then I'm still going with Tatum. But if you're talking about the next 2 to 3 months, I think Al Horford is the most consistent number two option, and they don't like making him the number two option. They're trying to build confidence in their young wing players. They want one of those guys to step up and be the number two. I mean, I there's got to be a point that you stop mentioning Gordon Hayward's name, because I mean that you still have to work with what you have, right? So I people are saying, oh, just write this season off, next year's the championship season. Yeah, I kind of feel that way too, but I still want them to overachieve as they have in the past couple of years. I still want them to get to the Eastern Conference Finals as a definite, and then if they get to the NBA Finals, that to me is the overachievement. And it's just, even when in this win streak, I don't think that there is a consistent second option to score offensively. Tatum is going to be that guy, but I don't necessarily think I would trust him right now. I would rather post up Al Horford and let him do some work down there. But I mean, depending on who he's going up against with the matchup.
So that's interesting to me that even after, I mean, maybe this was what you're saying happened like right when Gordon Hayward got hurt, but it would be hard for me to ever imagine again in the wake of a 16 game winning streak, okay, in which you beat the Warriors, granted at home, but you beat the Warriors, you beat some good teams, to then turn around and be like, well, you know, we'll just come back and try to win the championship next year when we have Hayward. That's like that's a funny notion to me, man. I can't rationalize the notion of giving up on you. You know what I mean?
They're not giving up, for sure. They probably believe that they have a chance to get at the players, but I mean, they believed that last year too. They believed it when they got swept out of the playoffs by Cleveland a couple of years ago. As a fan though, I'm not putting that expectation on the team. I expect them to go to the Eastern Conference Finals. That's my expectation. If they go to the NBA Finals, then that's exceeding expectations. And if they had Hayward for the full year, I would probably be changing my tune a little bit.
I guess this is really the question. Forget like how you look at this roster as is. Is your expectation that the Celtics should be out there trying to improve themselves again by this trade deadline, or should they be sitting pat and being like, you know, we'll see what we come back with next year? That's the real issue to me.
That's the problem. I think if you had Gordon Hayward, and if you're Danny Ainge, you're looking at it and saying, well, my plan was to have these young guys and just stand pat in general. All health
right.
being aside, I would imagine that his plan was to stand pat at the deadline unless he saw a deal that was just too good to pass up, right? And he wanted to keep all his young guys, and some of these one-off contracts like Tice and Larkin would be gone next year, and then he would be able to rework things at that point. I'm not sure what he's thinking now. I think that he still wants Gordon Hayward to be that piece. So I don't think that he goes and tries to improve the roster this season in trying to fill that void to get to an NBA championship, because what happens when Gordon Hayward comes back? Like, who is this player? Is it just a rental for the year and then you're sacrificing the younger guys? Or is it a player that's going to sign an extension and then may butt heads with Gordon Hayward? I think it's just too big of a risk to take. And you look at this year as just focus on building the confidence in the younger players. And however far you go. And then next year you start looking at high aspirations.
Well, I'll tell you who this guy could be. So I might as well move to it right now, because the talk is already coming out there, right? So that Marc Gasol might be available now for the Grizzlies.
Yeah.
Oh, that's where you're at. That's where you're at. You can forget about the Celtics per se. Is your Mia reaction to me, Mia, about Marc Gasol at this point? Because
man, I love Marc Gasol. I've always loved Marc Gasol. I've wanted him in a Celtics uniform. If you go to my Twitter page, I liked a stupid tweet a while ago about him thinking he might want out of Memphis. Like, I wanted him on the Celtics for many years.
I know.
Listen, man, I think they have a good thing going right now. And I would really think long and hard about whatever that trade may be. And if you're giving up Brown or Tatum, I think it's too late. I think Marc Gasol is too far past his prime to give up a young kid like that who has shown so much promise, both of them. So I'm out on that. Unless you find another deal that works, I'm out on Marc Gasol, Calvin.
Would you move Horford in a Gasol situation, out of curiosity?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that makes much sense. I feel like they're very similar players, and that maybe I'm doing a discredit to Marc Gasol and thinking that he's a little more injury-prone than Horford. You got to watch out for Horford's concussion history, but I feel like Horford is a better version of Gasol. And he has more time. He has more years left, in my opinion, too. I don't even know how old they are, but I could be totally off base on this one. That's just how it feels off the top of my head. I'm going to look it up, though.
I think Horford is a year younger than Gasol, if I remember correctly. But
31.
But Gasol came to the NBA later than Horford, so I don't know if you want to factor miles into it. I will say.
Yeah, you're right. A year younger.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like I said, I don't know how many games they played throughout their career. It's probably pretty closer than the year, or maybe even Horford's played more. I don't know if that factors into how you think about the player's stat. I just remembered that I wanted to talk about that Manute Bol story. We're gonna have to hit that briefly. Do you know about that? We're gonna have to hit that briefly.
No.
Well, then you're in for a treat. Anyway.
662 games for Marc Gasol, and where is he? 666 games for Al Horford.
Yeah, see, I knew it had to be a little closer there. Anyway, so Horford actually played just a few more.
Yep.
And that includes the season and a half that he missed. But my thing is okay, so. This was the prelude to transitioning into the Grizzlies firing David Fizdale. And, Murray, look, so David Fizdale benched Marc Gasol in the game right before he got fired for the fourth quarter. He came out and he said, look, I'm desperate. The bench players were playing well, so I left them in there. Didn't bring Marc Gasol back in. But here's the thing, Murray. One, Marc Gasol not having that good of a year right now. He's shooting his lowest shooting percentage. His defensive effort has clearly slipped in my mind. I don't think that he's on a physical decline. I just think he's on a terrible team, and you can see
you know, maybe it's a Gasol brothers thing, because the same thing happened to Pau Gasol with the Lakers. He sort of just stopped putting in effort.
I mean, he's rebounding better than he did last year. He's still scoring at a solid clip, and I mean, the only thing that's down, like you said, is his field goal percentage.
But his defense is not what it was. It hasn't been this year.
I mean, I haven't really been watching him, but the numbers say otherwise. So,
which numbers in particular? I mean,
like he has more blocks than he had last year. I mean, it seems like he's turning the ball over more. Maybe he's a little bit more lazy. He doesn't have as many assists as he did last year, but he's doing better than his career averages in pretty much every category except for field goal percentage.
I know his defensive points per shot are way down as well. You know what I mean? I think blocks is and steals are sort of misleading in terms of how well a defender is playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know that too.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, we don't need to like get into an advanced stat breakdown of Marc Gasol. My point is just like even the perception has been that his effort has been down a little bit this season, and even if it hasn't, right? Tensions have apparently been going on behind the scenes for a little while between Gasol and Fizdale. And yeah, the Grizzlies lost 8 in a row, right? But to my mind, I look at the Grizzlies, and I'm like, they started out 5-2. I don't, like, in what world were the Grizzlies not going to be one of the worst teams in the NBA this season? You know, when we did our season preview, I didn't understand how this team, like, has been, you know, scraping by on the same garbage roster that seems to get depleted more and more every year. Like, they got rid of Randolph and Tony Allen, right, who, you know, both had big contracts. And what do they end up in return for that? How does Chris Wallace, like, he continues to skate somehow David Fizdale in his second season after having, like, by the way, a good first season in which, like, in my
mm-hmm.
mind, the Grizzlies, they outplayed their talent, right? They were a playoff team last year.
Sure.
They had no business shooting there where they were. And Conley was hurt part of last year, too. Conley's hurt again right now. The team is like, I don't know, it always seems full of injuries. They always, like, outplay what they should. They made the playoffs last year after Conley got hurt on it. Just a giant flotation barge of garbage. To my mind, like, Fizdale is one of the better coaches in the NBA, and he's getting fired in his second season because he benched Marc Gasol for one fourth quarter. Like, is that really where we're at with the player control, the level of player control?
Does Gasol have a no-trade clause even? I mean, I don't think he does.
He's not.
So Memphis is basically just hitching their wagon to the player, even though I would imagine some of the other guys in the locker room are behind Fizdale, right? I mean, unless everybody in that locker room is behind Marc Gasol, there's no reason to fire the coach if the player is the one that's making causing a problem, and he has a no-trade clause. I mean, if half the locker room is not on his side, then why wouldn't you just ship him off and try and get what you can for him, or talk to him about it and try and get those guys on the same page before you just fire him? I know 8 losses in a row is not very good in the NBA, and they have not been playing well, but I feel like Fizdale got a raw deal in this one, man. I don't know what it is about Marc Gasol that the Grizzlies are seeing here, because if I had a superstar player quitting on a coach just because the team wasn't playing well, to me, you get rid of the player. You're not getting rid of the coach. I don't care what his talent level is. If your coach shows that he can have players overachieve, which he did last year, then you don't get rid of the coach. You keep that coach. Coaching matters in the NBA. A lot of people don't think it does. But I think guys like Brad Stevens, Greg Popovich, Popovich was proving it for years. And now there's finally a few other coaches that are doing similar things to Popovich and making their players better because they understand their talents. I think Fizdale is one of those guys. And I don't understand how management can hitch their wagon to a guy that, in your words, has basically been lazy, or lazy was my word, but you seem to think the effort's not there and he's giving up on the team. That's not a guy you want in the locker room. I don't care what his talent level is. If Michael Jordan was a quitter, trade him. Like, that's the bottom line. Michael Jordan was not a quitter, though. which is why you never trade a guy like that. But Marc Gasol, man, I used to like this guy quite a bit, but if this is all true, that he's the only reason, and he's been making a stink to management or something, or maybe management just didn't agree with him being benched, then I don't like it. I don't like it one bit.
Gasol went out and denied getting him fired, and I tend to believe him in this situation because I think his personality, he doesn't seem like, even though it was definitely true that he was fighting with Fizdale, and it probably was more likely that their tension led to him being fired, but even that, like, all the things you're saying, it still makes no sense to me, because now the reports are everywhere that, yeah, they are trying to move Marc Gasol anyway.
Right. So what's the point?
It seems to me that, like, Fizdale essentially was used as a scapegoat in this situation because they lost 8 in a row, and Chris Wall's job is on the line right now. Ugh. In the GM 2007. Seriously, what is...
Get Wallace out of there.
Okay, Chris Wallace made the trade, Pau Gasol, that ended up netting him Marc Gasol. He did that, like, the first month he was there. He drafted Mike Conley. Okay, he did both of those in his first season. Name me one impressive thing he's done since. You know what I mean? Like, he signed Chandler Parsons to a $97 million contract 2 years ago, where Chandler Parsons was clearly not healthy enough to play.
Oh, man.
And he hasn't played one
Calvin,
valuable minute for the
Grizzlies. I wish that I had known that we were going to go in the Chris Wallace direction on this show, because I would have done a little bit more research than just going to Wikipedia to see what he did in Boston, because I know that he was a horrible, horrible GM for the Boston Celtics. When he left the Celtics for Memphis, and he replaced Jerry West back in, that's about 10, like, what did you say, 10 years ago now?
Yeah.
I thought that was the greatest thing that could have happened to the Boston Celtics in the history of anything happening. And guess what? The Boston Celtics won the NBA championship the year that Chris Wallace walked away to go, or not when he walked away from the Celtics, I should say, but when he was hired by Memphis to replace Jerry West. And
I mean, to me,
Wallace was with the Celtics for I think a good 10 years, hired in 97. He was, so it was a while between, or it was like just a year between the two. And he made stupid trades, like the Joe Johnson trade, where he got Tony Delk and Rodney Rogers from the Phoenix Suns. He drafted Paul Pierce, so give him credit for that. But he also traded for Vin Baker and then signed him another time after that. So this guy, to me, was a horrible GM for the Celtics. And I don't want to give him credit for drafting Paul Pierce, because it was an obvious choice, right, at the time, and in hindsight. And when he joined Memphis, the Celtics won the championship that year. So I just thought that was a little bit of karma looking back on it. And I am shocked that 10 years later, he still has a job.
Yeah, by the way, I don't give any GM credit for hitting on any top five pick.
Well, Pierce was number 10. He fell.
Oh, yeah, that's right. But wasn't Pierce number 10 because of, like, didn't he have, like, some off-the-court issues in college? Like, I remember him in college being considered, like, a higher prospect. Like, and I think he ended up falling to 10 for some reason. I can't remember
right.
what.
He did fall. I don't really remember why, but did fall. So that's what I meant when I said it was an obvious choice back then. Paul Pierce at number 10, like, what else are you going to get? You have to try. And it worked out. But that he's not the GM that Paul Pierce even thrives under. Obviously, Danny Ainge was that GM. So I feel like Chris Wallace in Boston was a bad situation, and it was sort of on the heels of the whole Patino thing, and it was just a bad time for the organization, and that's why I'm just so surprised that he still has a job with Memphis.
Yeah, I am surprised. I don't think he's had the job for long. I really just feel bad for Fizdale, because I think he's a good coach. I think he'll get picked up by another team and be fine. I'm also partial to him just because I like the take that for data thing. But really, I do think that he's a good coach, and he manages to scheme with like teams that are legitimately not talented. Okay, Murray, real quick, this Manute Bol story. So, Manute Bol, you know, played in the NBA in what, the 80s? The 80s and 90s. You know about Manute Bol, right? Everyone knows about
yes,
Manute Bol.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So, this guy who, like, was instrumental in bringing him over from Africa, former Cleveland State coach Kevin Mackey, said that, he brought Manute Bol over from Sudan to the United States and completely made up his birthday to be October 16th, 1962. But Mackey says that he had no idea how old he was and was in his 40s and possibly even his 50s when he played in the NBA. And in college, he was in his 30s, his late 30s. In the NBA, he was in his 40s and even 50.
I mean, I guess it would explain why he passed away as quote unquote soon as he did at such a young age. But man, where can we find some proof on that?
This is the problem. We can't. Here's the thing. Here's what you can do. That if you this goes out to anyone who's listening to this. If you want to like a Google image search old pictures of Manute Bol in the NBA and sort of even try to find like Manute Bol in college Google image search, and granted this is not 100% verification technology because you could also do the same thing with Greg Oden, but just looking at his face, it's like I kind of like tend to believe the story. You know what I mean? He just looks old.
Sure. Yeah, I don't really remember seeing him on TV and wondering how old he was, but I mean, wow. In hindsight, I guess it kind of makes sense. Hey, do you want to take a chance on a caller here? I can't even believe we have a caller. I didn't even put the number out there. They must have seen my tweet.
Take that caller.
Take that caller. We just like to play roulette around here. It is a Maryland area code, so I feel like we may have spoken to this person before. 240, welcome to Careless Whispers on CLNS Media. You're probably the first caller we've had in weeks, maybe not months. What's going on?
Oh, my goodness, guys. He's alive. He is not dead. Matt Rury, who do you think you're talking to right now? Come on. Trivia. You got to have a trivia here. You haven't talked to this guy in a long time.
I feel like it's Langford. I'm hearing Langford.
It sounds like Brian Langford, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's Langford.
Oh, my goodness. I'm glad we took this call, Calvin. I can't believe it. Brian ain't lying. What's going on, dude?
Hey, what's up, Calvin? Calvin's a
good
voice. Calvin's
a hell.
I recognize him.
Yeah, we did a few shows together, Brian.
Doing good, gentlemen. You know, I was on Twitter. I've been ranting all day about Fizdale, and that's just not you don't get organizations like Memphis. And y'all talk about Chris Wallace first. He got lucky to run into Grit and Grind. Once Grit and Grind was over with, it looked like Memphis started to get exposed. And I don't care what Mark Gasol is going to say for the next 2 weeks. He went in that office and said, it's either me or him. And Memphis said, hey, we're not going to lose you. I guess we're going to have to make a move on him. But here's the thing, and Rory said it perfectly. I liked Marc Gasol maybe 2 years ago, the most definitely I loved him 2 years ago. He's not a leader, okay? Every time Mike Conley goes down, it just seems like Memphis falls apart. So if you're going to give Fizdale a year and a half to work with what he's got in Memphis right now, then that's crazy. And I honestly think that people should not even take the job. Don't even entertain it. Because when a Celtics fan agrees with LeBron, that's kind of crazy. But LeBron said it perfectly. I guess Fizz wasn't going to kiss nobody's ass up there. And that's what he wasn't going to do. So guess what? I'll watch Memphis the rest of the year. I think J.B. Bickerstaff, who is pretty much almost disrespecting him, that's his pet. That's what he is. That's what he's going to do. And Memphis will crumble, and they will be forced to trade Mark Gasol. But the question is, what is his value worth? Is he even the same guy he was 2 years ago? I don't want to hear nobody call because I know Celtics fans bug my message. We'll take Mark Gasol in a heartbeat. No, I don't want that. If you are going to sit out here and play this situation, I don't want him on your team, guys. I don't understand what Memphis is doing. And this is why when people say, why aren't players loyal? Why aren't coaches loyal? Why do people move around the league? These are the reasons why. When you watch a coach get fired in a year and a half.
Yeah, I'm telling you, Brian.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Thomas. I don't understand
why anyone is loyal. Like, especially like knowing that everyone in the league is a mercenary and someone will turn on you in a second. Like, I feel bad for people who are loyal because, like, you're putting your neck out there for the team to turn on you, for, the fans to turn on you, for the second that you're not producing on the level that they want, or that, you know, they just decide that, like, the offense is moving in a different direction or whatever. They draft a guy, like, I would never be loyal if I was a player. So, as far as Marc Gasol goes, I don't get it. If the him or me part is even okay, I understand that, even though I would disagree with their choice. But then now all the reports are they're trying to move Marc Gasol anyway. So like, it was him or me. So now it's both of you. You know what I mean? Like, even that doesn't make sense to me.
My point. I know my point's gonna kill me because there was something else when you guys were talking about Marc Gasol and the Grizzlies, but it's just sad to see these type of things happening, especially to a good coach like that. And I'm scared he's going to get the Mark Jackson treatment. You know, Mark Jackson hasn't had another job since Golden State. And if people are saying that, well, he didn't even get interviewed. Mark Jackson didn't even get a sniff. And I'm scared that it's going to possibly happen to Fizdale. But I don't want our team nowhere to be associated with Marc Gasol. You know, you don't need players on your team that is going to go to upper management or whatever they do and say, look, you know, this guy just got to go. This just ain't working. Listen, man, Fizz, you know, I hated Miami when he was in Miami, but there was something that he did to get through with some of those guys in Miami. It wasn't all Spoelstra. If you watch Fizz on the bench half the time, he was the one engaging more with the players and getting through to them. But I wish him nothing but the best. I hope Memphis finds a way to climb out of the gutter, because Hubie Brown or Mike Fratello, they ain't coming back to that door, so they can get ready to go through years of misery, I should say.
I think we saw the Mark Jackson situation was a little different, though, because he was engaging in open warfare with his assistant coaches, and like it created an atmosphere of distrust among them, and like, you know, like underhanded comments to the media. I think that Mark Jackson hasn't gotten a job since then because of the perception that he's a deceptive person when it comes to like how he treats his coaching staff and his players.
I don't know. I feel like Fizdale seems to have a pretty good reputation following him right now. He's got a lot of people stepping up to back him up. So I would be very surprised if he did not find a job after the next year or two, depending on where the openings end up. Coming at the end of the season, I'm sure there will be a firing or two. There usually is. Brian, man, great to hear from you, dude. I'm glad you caught my tweet there. And you caught us at the right time, because I was fired up about that Fizdale stuff too, man. I used to think Marc Gasol would be a key component to a Celtics team. And I just, regardless of Fizdale's firing, that just piles on top of what we've talked about tonight. But if he's quitting on Memphis and his teammates in general just because they're not winning games, then that's a problem. And if he has a problem with the coach, I don't care how good your talent is. Unless the coach is a complete moron and everybody else on that team agrees with you, then there's no excuse for quitting when you're out on the court.
Yeah, I mean, you drop 8 games in a row. I mean, get your sorry butt on the block and find a way to win a game. You're 8 games in a row. You're down. And I even think Dave Yeager was a hell of a coach for Memphis. I mean, something happened there where somebody made some disagreements, and Dave Yeager out the door. Good coach. I think Sacramento is going to be a building project. And I think, again, I hate to always say this, LeBron's to the perfectly. Philadelphia has worked with Brett Brown. How many times have people said, man, just fire Brett Brown? I mean, LeBron does it, so he just kind of contradicted himself. Everybody wants instant success overnight. LeBron wants the same thing, so I don't know why he didn't say that. But you have to work with things. When you knew Mike Conley going down again was going to hurt. And then one more thing before I forget. I want to hear you guys talk about it. You guys probably did. Steven Jackson had no right to take a shot at Chandler Parsons. That was not Chandler Parsons begging Memphis to sign him to that $100 million contract. That was Memphis thinking that Parsons was still the same guy he was that go around in Houston, and he wasn't. So, Steven Jackson, definitely in the wrong. Don't get upset. The boy got his money. If you had done the same thing to you, you wouldn't have denied $100 million. So, I don't want to hear Steven Jackson on his Instagram rants no more. But good talking to you guys, as always, man. I'll definitely be sure to tune in. You know, if it's every week from now on, you guys got me every week. I'll make my
little. All right, Brian. Hey, man, we try and do it every week. Sometimes it's a different day. Sometimes it's thrown out and it's not happening that week. But I try to put it up on my Twitter. So keep an eye on that and definitely keep listening, man. We appreciate it. All right, there he goes. Brian A. Lyon, Calvin. We haven't heard from him in a while. A longtime CLNS media fan, follower, listener, contributor. He was on the post-game shows for us for a long time. I always loved his perspective on things. I think he's living down in the D.C. area, and he's always been a big Celtics fan. So love hearing from him.
Yeah, I just loved his enthusiasm. He was always a guy with a lot of energy. When on nights where I might have not have had it, Brian was always excited and ready to do the show. So I was going to ask, what happened to whatever happened to him. I remember he was doing that podcast with Backy for a while, but I guess that didn't happen. This won't happen anymore either, right?
Yeah, anyway. I think he's doing his own thing down there right now. But either way, I mean, maybe he'll call in a week or two, and we'll hear from him, ask him some more questions or something. Because yeah, he was one of the better hosts for sure on the post game show. And I can't remember. There's probably a time where we were on a streak of some sorts. He and I, when the Celtics were playing poorly, they would find a way to win on the games that he was doing with me on the post game show. So that was a lot of fun. Anyway, what do you say we do 15 minutes of NFL talk? How do you feel about that?
That was my exact thought. Let's start with this Eli thing, since I'm a Giants fan and I feel
something. Yeah, let's start with it. Did you see him? He was choked up today, Calvin. I don't blame him. He may have just lost his job.
Was he choked up?
I should find this clip that I saw earlier and email it to you so you can check it out. But yeah, he was choking up a little bit when they were talking to him about it.
Interesting. Because the thing that I read about it was one. Okay, for those who don't know, Eli Manning is not going to start this weekend in game against the Raiders. The Giants are going to start Geno Smith, which I have thought on, which I'll get to in a second. But Giants are starting Geno Smith, and from their perspective, like this season is basically a lost cause. And McAdoo and Jerry Reese came out and said, we're trying to look at some guys. There's no point in continuing to put Eli out there because we want to just give these guys a chance and figure out what we have in them. And the Giants also said that they offered Eli the opportunity to continue his start streak. For those who don't know, Eli's got the longest current starting streak in the NFL for a quarterback, and second longest of all time. He passed Peyton Manning this season, so second longest of all time, behind only Brett Favre. And so now it's going to come to an end this weekend. And the Giants offered Eli to continue starting. Then they would take him out after, a series or two, and then, play the other guys after that. But Eli said no. He didn't want to taint the notion of the streak and have it, turn out just compile stats unfairly. And he said, no, if you want to play them, just play them.
That's honorable. Good for him for saying that, first of all.
Yeah.
I'm with him on that one. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and it's like, I also enjoy it because it's like the most Eli possible response is to, be like the streak. That he also said that the streak, is not that big of a deal. It's like, all of that to me, and, sometimes when the guy says that, I don't believe it, but, just Eli's personality is so, nonchalant about things anyway, that I don't know. There's a sort of there's a beauty to me to the notion of, like, Eli sort of, even though he's not actually making the choice, he kind of is making the choice to end this starting streak and on Eli terms, which is to nonchalantly and acceptingly. You know, so I kind of appreciate that he had the, that they gave him that opportunity so then Eli could sort of decide, no, I'm good. You know?
I like it.
Yeah.
I think that he's taking the right approach. I think that it would almost be embarrassing to go get trotted out there for a series or two, and then regardless of what happens, the backup comes in every game. He realizes he's being very self-aware, and he realizes that it would taint the streak. People would criticize him but criticize the record. Just because he didn't finish games, and that would be out there, you know. And I don't blame him. Like, if you want to take my job, then fine, do it. Just don't make me start the day and then let somebody else finish the work. Like that, it just seems like a waste of time. I feel like he at this point, if he's going to be shifting into a backup role or a non-starter role, if you will, then his time will be better spent trying to analyze the pictures and the film that comes out of the games and what comes back to the sideline and trying to help those young quarterbacks. And if he can accept that, then he might be pretty good at it. Who knows? Then he gets himself into a coaching job in the future or what have you. And I know that's a little ways down the line. He's probably not thinking about that immediately, but I think he's started with the right approach.
Yeah, by the way, all of this doesn't rule out the notion that, like, Eli might be starting week one of the start of next season. Like,
sure.
The logic behind, like, yeah, we need to see some young guys in a team that's 2-9. And by the way, it's in the Giants' best interest if they don't win games at this point. So, even if you think Eli is by the way, and Eli, to my mind, has not had that bad of a season when you look at the fact that the Giants' top four wide receivers are all hurt. Like, three of their offensive linemen are hurt. He's got 14 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. But 14 touchdowns, not great. But again, considering, like, what it could be with the situation, like, I don't think he's played poorly at all this year. I'm just going to throw that out there. And, like, I don't think he's in a position where, like, he has much of a chance to do anything. Like, the defense gets through the line so fast. You can accuse him of being overly cautious, and I think that's a fair criticism. But he has not been that terrible. But with all that being said, Murray, I don't have a problem with him taking him out. He passed Peyton already. He was never going to catch Favre. I looked it up today because I was curious. He'll need 87 more consecutive starts to catch Brett Favre.
Oh, wow. There's no way. It's impossible. Totally impossible. Yeah. What is that? It's like
six
five
years.
More years?
Yeah,
six
it's
years?
Like almost 6. Yeah, it's 6 years. So, like, you have any 36. Do I think it's not impossible? But first of all, let's just let that sink in for a moment as a testament to, like, Brett Favre's greatness and durability. The fact that Eli's the number two quarterback of all time in terms of consecutive starts, and he's still 6 years behind Brett Favre is ridiculous. Right?
Yeah. It's almost like nobody's ever going to do that, because even though a guy like Tom Brady is playing into his year 40 and probably 41, and we'll see about 42, he did not have the consecutive starts that these guys had because he had that major knee injury. So it's pretty incredible that Eli could even get that close. And not only that, but Brett Favre did it for multiple teams. He kind of got lucky in the fact that one team was finished with him and other teams decided that they were going to give him a chance. Eli Manning doesn't have that luxury because this is happening to him in the middle of a season. So his team is not going to trade him away to give him another start next week and keep the streak going. And they're also not going to start him because they've given him this option and he decided not to do it. So he's not in the same position as Brett Favre was. He could maybe he will play for another 6 years, but he's not in the spot that Favre was with that luxury to move from team to team and still be the starter.
Right. All that being said, again, like I said a minute ago, I'm fine with the decision. But where it infuriates me is they're not starting Eli Manning so they can start Geno Smith. Geno Smith.
Yeah, he's the guy that you need to get more looks at. I mean, who's your third stringer, Calvin? I don't even know, but tell me.
Well, our third stringer is a rookie, Davis Webb, who should be.
That's more reasonable.
If the Giants said we're not starting Eli this week, so we can take a look at third stringer Davis Webb, I'd be 100% in favor of that. But the fact that we have a rookie on our team who we're not starting because we need to take a look at Geno Smith, who's a free agent at the end of the season, by the way, and is incredibly unlikely to end up back in the Giants anyway, I find to be like another in a long line of baffling Ben McAdoo decisions that's almost certain to cost him his job at the end of the season. I think all of this is like...
So this confuses me, though, because isn't this more an ownership and management question at this point? Because, or are they just resigned to giving him a full season to see what happens and if he can turn it around? And does this play in at all? Because the Giants historically have had stretches where they've been mediocre and then they've gone on runs and they've gone to the Super Bowl and won, or they've made the playoffs out of nowhere. And does management just think that they can just do that again? Or are they really believing that this guy can turn things around? Because it seems to me that he's made plenty of decisions that warrant his firing, and benching Eli Manning, it seems like a last straw type of situation where he is just grasping for absolutely anything to keep his job. I just don't see it happening. Why is he still there?
He's still there essentially because of the quote classiness of the Giants organization. I don't know if you want to see it as actual classiness or not, but they came out a couple of weeks ago and said, we don't fire coaches during the middle of the season. We're going to give him the opportunity to play out this season. He's already, gotten in fights with all his players, especially not all of his players, but a good number of his players, especially on the defensive side, and. John Mara came out and said no, because, all the speculation was with him getting into these fights, he suspended two starting cornerbacks for like reasons that nobody has still been able to figure out. There have been games where the defense, like literally you could see the Giants-Rams game where like defensive backs were just allowing guys to make catches and like half-heartedly jogging behind them as they ran in for touchdowns. The fact that he already hasn't been fired was shocking to me, but I understand what they're doing, but at the same time, I'm like, I have to
just bad policy.
Yeah. But
if you determine that somebody is incapable of doing what they've been asked to do, then it doesn't matter how long their contract is or just trying to be respectful to the full year or something. No, you fire that person.
Yeah, I'm going to move on here because I want to get to this Greg Schiano thing real quick. We can talk about fighting next week if it's still relevant. But so Tennessee signed what I forgot what the name of it is, but basically it was like an intent to coach contract where you sign a contract with a guy saying that he's going to be announced as your coach. Numbers are written out, but he's not actually announced yet. So it's sort of like a letter of intent for college recruits, essentially.
Yep.
So the people in Tennessee found out about it, and there was just a gigantic backlash to Schiano. People did not want him to be the coach there. A big part of it was the notion that he was connected to the Jerry Sandusky situation. He was an assistant under Paterno while Sandusky was there. There were protests in Tennessee. Somebody spray painted a rock that said Greg Schiano condoned child rape at Penn State.
That seems pretty intense. Okay.
Yeah. So in the face of this public backlash at the University of Tennessee, they backed out of their contract with Schiano, and now they have to find somebody else.
College football is so crazy, man. Just the people that follow college football in general, to me, are just absolutely insane. Go ahead. Continue. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, so here's a couple of things for me. Here's one thing that you need to know. There is no actual evidence that Greg Schiano – Greg Schiano, by the way, was this last year Urban Meyer's offensive coordinator at Ohio State. But anyway,
yep.
So it's not like
former NFL coach.
Job. Yeah, former NFL coach, former Rutgers coach. So I did a good job there. But anyway, there's no actual evidence that he covered anything up at Penn State. The allegation comes from Mike McQuarrie, who claims that Mike McQuarrie, by the way, was an assistant coach at Penn State 10 years after Schiano left. Okay.
Yeah,
so
for those of you who don't remember the whole Sandusky thing, you can go Google it and read about it. But basically, McQuarrie is the guy that has been accusing everyone in pretty much every situation.
Yeah, but which is fine. But the point is McQuarrie and Schiano don't actually know each other. But he claims that he heard another coach, Tom Bradley, say that Schiano knew about things that were going on there. Okay, Bradley and Schiano have both denied this notion. It's just
yep.
that never happened. But the point is even if you want to assume that McQuarrie's conversation with Bradley happened, you still have to then make another assumption that Bradley was telling the truth. It's still a hearsay conversation, regardless of
yep.
of what.
Hearsay is the word that's the exact word that popped into my head.
Yeah, it's a third party conversation that still contains entirely no evidence. And yeah, maybe it's because the crime of child molestation is so heinous that you wanted put a brush over anyone who's ever coached at that university. But to my mind, it feels a bit unfair. And I don't think the reason the Tennessee fans were mad, honestly, mostly, has to do with the fact that Schiano, quote, condoned child rape. I think that was what they were using, because Tennessee fans didn't want an outsider coming into Tennessee, and they didn't want Greg Schiano specifically, who they don't think is a good coach. I think it was.
It could be, but if that's the thing that they're using, then that's ridiculous. The bottom line is, these accusations are out there, right? People are aware of these accusations. Parties that are involved have denied things that have happened, and the accuser still says that it's true, right? Don't you think that the University of Tennessee, who, by the way, they're not totally clean, right? Bruce Pearl comes to mind. For their basketball team, there are things that have happened at the University of Tennessee where they have been disciplined by the NCAA. They know how things work. Don't you think they would have done their due diligence on Greg Schiano before they intended to hire him? So, to me, if they're backing out of this thing because of public backlash, that's more on them. They've got to know if any of that is true, or they have to have some sort of belief whether it's true or not before they actually go and say they're going to hire a guy. So, to me, the University of Tennessee is the one that's screwing this thing up. We've got 60 seconds, Calvin. Take it from here.
Yeah, Peyton Manning has a supposed sexual encounter incident in college at Tennessee. Do you think if the Vols announced they were hiring Peyton Manning as their head coach, that people would be scraping rocks right now?
People would be going crazy. They would be loving it.
Yeah. That's it. It's hard to say that I feel bad for Greg Schiano, because, screw Greg Schiano anyway. He seems like a trick. Whatever, if they hire him or they don't hire him. If you don't want him and you want to protest him, that's fine. But it just feels a little dirty to me seems like they were trying to manipulate the school by forcing this issue it's not like Ohio State people weren't protesting Schiano under the notion that, he condoned child rape. It turned into this thing that I think was motivated by football, and then people tried to use politics successfully to get him out, and I don't think that's fair. That's all.
I'm with you on this one. I think you got a bad rap. I think a lot of guys we talked about tonight got a bad rap. Fizdale, Schiano, that's about it. Much on Marc Gasol. Eli Manning, sometimes he gets a bad rap, I think. Anyway, I wish we had gotten to some Lonzo Ball stuff. Maybe we can do that next week, because, boy, oh boy, I think you and I could probably shoot better in the NBA than this guy. No, that's not true, obviously. That's hyperbole, but still. We're not getting paid millions of dollars. That's next
week. I've got
a
complicated message. Look, we can do lots of ball and Marcus Martin next week, because they're
perfect.
They're, They're both shooting about the same percentage from the field right now. So
perfect. And one brings a lot more to the table than the other. And one is a rookie, granted. Anyway, thank you, Calvin, for... yeah, okay.
Wait, next week,
all right, we'll get to this next
week.
You can't even you can't even put Lonzo Ball anywhere near Marcus Smart on defensive ends. Don't even give me that. We're not going to go there. We'll talk about offense next week, all right?
That's actually, fine. We will talk a little bit about defense, but not, as, not entirely about defense. We'll talk a little bit.
Okay, fair enough. That's going to do it for us tonight here on Careless Whispers on CLNS Media. Thank you all for listening. Brian Langford... Brian Ain't Lying on Twitter. Go check him out. He's a good follow. He called us tonight. You can call us next week. Have a good night, Calvin, buddy. I'll talk to you later.
Bye, Larry.
The way you work it,
no diggity.